The Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Matthew.
Glory to you, O Lord.
After he had fed the people, Jesus made the disciples get into a boat and precede him to the other side, while he dismissed the crowds. After doing so, he went up on the mountain by himself to pray. When it was evening, he was there alone. Meanwhile, the boat, already a few miles offshore, was being tossed about by the waves, for the wind was against it. During the fourth watch of the night, he came toward them walking on the sea. When the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified. "It is a ghost," they said, and they cried out in fear. At once Jesus spoke to them, "Take courage, it is I. Do not be afraid." Peter said to him in reply, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." He said, "Come." Peter got out of the boat and began to walk on the water toward Jesus. But when he saw how strong the wind was, he became frightened. And beginning to sink, he cried out, "Lord, save me." Immediately, Jesus stretched out his hand and caught Peter and said to him, "O you of little faith, why did you doubt?" After they got into the boat, the wind died down. Those who were in the boat did him homage, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." The Gospel of the Lord. Okay, there's so much going on in this gospel passage, and it's so important to us not to see all of it, but to get something out of it for ourselves. So I want to try to take this homily in two sections. One is kind of like looking at the scene, like giving an extended look at the scene, and maybe that's a springboard for your prayer. So be it. Good, pray. Like get. Keep going with that. The second part is like a little bit of how we might apply it, how we can make this our own. I don't know. I think the first thing to say about the gospel passage is we have to first think, how is it that we have this story? How is it that we know about this event? And the answer is because St. Peter would have told this story. St. Peter would have used, this is one of the kind of, it's a seminal event for him. It's a very significant event. It means a lot. It's not simply just like tied onto the scene that we heard last week, although it does come right after, of the feeding of 5,000. Now it's the boat and the waves and walking on water. The rest, Peter himself in his preaching is telling this story. That's why, and the early church treasures it as its own story. But how do I know that this is Peter's story and that he's telling it? Because he looks kind of foolish, and no one would have dared to put Peter in that kind of light in the early church, right? Because he's such a central figure in the early church. For them to be retelling the story, it must have been because St. Peter himself owned it, knew its significance, and preached it. Now, when we know that this is St. Peter's story, I think it allows us to go deeper into what's going on here, right? Because there are a number of movements in this. If we can see, right, Jesus orders his disciples. He said Jesus made the disciples get into a boat and precede him to the other side. Okay, so Jesus has given the instruction. You go. And what do? They don't stand around and say, "Hey, look, we're fishermen. I mean, we can see that things are churning. It's not going to be good for us to go into that storm." They don't. They go. Jesus sends them, and they go. Now they're being tossed about. And you can imagine, right? These are fishermen. They know what this sea is. They've been out there before. And these are strong men. They can do the job, except tonight they can't, right? Except in this scene, they can't. They can't do it. They're a few miles offshore, but that's as far as they can get. And then we see the rest, right? And this is like the unfolding of Peter's recounting the scene. Yeah, Jesus walking on water. They think it's a ghost, right? They don't even know what's going on. Right from the beginning, they see Jesus. And then here, Peter, this is one of the things that I've puzzled over for some time, and I'm still puzzling over it. And I think that that's a good thing, right? We have to keep chewing on these things. We don't understand them at first glance. These are not nice moral stories that, you know, here's the point of it, and then everything else resolves. Okay, like, now I don't have to think about it anymore and whatever. No. This is a real event, and we can ponder over it, what it meant and the rest. But here, through Peter's eyes, we get this strange unfolding of Peter saying, can you imagine yourself in this position? The boat is being tossed about by the storm. You're trying to make progress. You can't get there. You're frustrated. You see something on the water. You don't know that it's Jesus. It's a scary, everyone's scared. And Peter, in this scene where Jesus has said, it's me, don't be afraid, Peter says, Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water. Who would do that? I think that I would not do that, but I'm standing here on dry land, you know what I'm, but there's something more here. When Jesus speaks to his apostles, he makes himself known as, I don't know if I say it, the center of all, the center of everything. He makes himself, Jesus, this is crazy, Jesus makes himself safe harbor in the middle of the water. There's something compelling about this interaction where Peter, in his heart, is stirred to move and make this request of Jesus. It's crazy. And he probably doesn't even know what he's saying. I mean, we know that from Peter throughout the gospel. It's kind of like true to form. But he's moved. He said, I'll come to you. I'll walk on water. I don't know, everybody seems to, you know, we remember this story, but think, put yourself in that situation. So Jesus somehow is stirring his heart. He sees Jesus, and he wants to be with him. Right? He knows that where Jesus is, there is safety. He might be in the boat, but there with Jesus is safety and salvation and the rest. And he wants to be with him. But it's more than that, because I think it's also something to do with the project of the Jesus' project of restoration, the restoration of human hearts and lives, in such manner that when Peter sees Jesus walking on the water, he knows also that he can walk on water. If we remember, right, this feeding of the 5,000, it's not simply that Jesus does it and everybody's step back and look at him and, wow, okay. He involves the apostles in the miracle so that they are part and parcel of what he's doing. And if they're part and parcel of what he's doing, they can do what he does. And they see him walking on the water. Peter knows that he can do what he does. And he wants to be there. He wants to be as close to Jesus as possible. He wants to be in the action. He wants to be caught up in the mix. And that's it. It's not it. Jesus is stirring his heart to have him say this. And he probably, as it's coming out of his mouth, he's saying, I don't know about that. Command me to walk on the water. And then what? Jesus says, come, and he goes. That's it. He says, come, and he goes. But then as he goes, right? I mean, you can imagine, how do you walk on water when there are waves? We can imagine tranquil lake and whatever, maybe, you know, it's, we can picture it. I can hardly even picture this. How does he walk on water? There's waves crashing all around. There's wind. He's overwhelmed. He takes his eyes off Jesus, and he's done. Then he cries out to him. Jesus reaches out, pulls him. Okay, so there's power in the scene. We can put ourselves in there. Like I said, if that's a launching pad for prayer, then so be it. Take it and run with it. Okay, what about a little bit of application? I'll just give a little bit today. The reason why this is being told, the reason why the story is recounted over and over again, is because it means something for the early church in their life of discipleship. Because it's all about trusting and following Jesus. Our whole life is about trusting and following Jesus. The life of the early church is trusting and following Jesus. And that's it. That's it. And so this story is told then as a helpful push into that reality. We know that the Christian life is always lived as a response to Jesus's call. Not one of us is here because we're so good that our initiative has led us to praise the one true God. No, we're here because Jesus has called us to be here, and we, in humility, have responded to him and said, yes, Lord, okay, yes. We're not here because we're so great. We're here because we realize we're not. And in humility, we submit ourselves to Jesus, walk his way. And when we receive the call of Jesus, we're called to do something that's seemingly impossible. We're called to live this life of faith that presents massive challenges to us. We are called, just as Peter saw in Jesus, the renewed humanity. We are called to take up our share in not only the renewed humanity that Jesus wants for us, but in order to take up our share in the project of renewing all of creation, renewing all humanity as well. Being vehicle, not just recipients of God's mercy, but being vehicles of God's mercy. Right? We're made for love. God loves us, and he wants us to bring his love to life in the world. My friends, this is a challenge of the walking on water variety. This is a big, big challenge. And if we take our eyes off of Jesus, right? So this is it, right? Jesus, in our renewed humanity, Jesus wants to give us hearts and lives that love God above all things, right? We love God with our whole heart and mind and soul and strength, and we love our neighbor as ourselves. Jesus is renewing humanity so that we are able to do that. As soon as we take our eyes off of Jesus, we can't do it. But we can do it by keeping our eyes on Jesus. He's calling us to it. It's his initiative. He's calling us to it, and he's equipping us for the task. He's animating us to do it. He's sustaining us in the effort. But as you know, my friends, all too often we take our eyes off of Jesus. And we find that we feel like we're lacking in the strength. We have a hard time persevering in love. Do you know, I hear every so often, like in the confessional, you know, Father, like, I need more patience. I want more patience. I say, you know what this is, though? We're lacking in love. We're lacking in love for the other. It's not about patience, like, I want to be a patient person. It's that I need to bring God's patient love to life for this person. And this is an impossible task when we lose track of Jesus. He's the one who's giving us power and strength for the task. Again, he's the one who's animating us for God's purposes. He's the one who's calling us to walk on water. And if we keep our eyes on him, then we can. But this is it, my friends. This is the entire Christian life. And especially today, we're going to respond to the call of Jesus. We're going to follow him wherever he leads. We're going to bring his patient, merciful, kind, and compassionate love to life wherever we go. But at his command we do it. And only with the strength and the grace that he provides. And look, we can get lost, yeah? We can look around and see just how difficult the task is, just how impossible it is. And like Peter, find ourselves sinking. And in those moments, perhaps this is it. We have the strength of his prayer also today. Lord, save me. Save me. Save me from myself. Save me from self-concern. Save me from being overwhelmed at the winds that are blowing against us. Right? Lord, you have called me to the impossible task. Save me so that I can do it with the strength that you give.